American trumpeter Dizzy Gillespie recorded here thousands of miles from Lewis. It's strange to think that around the same time, the MacDonald sisters and others were making their own recordings of the Psalms in their island crofts and kirks. Dizzy's not a descendant of the Gaelic people, nor is his music, but there is a connection to the Psalms here. His surname, Gillespie, is from the Gaelic for bishop's servant, and that highlights the historical link between the Gaels who settled in the American South in the 17th and 18th centuries and their black slaves. Many of these slaves had to learn to speak Gaelic to serve their masters, and as they attended church services with their Gaelic plantation owners, it was only natural that they also learned to sing in the Gaelic style too. Gillespie knew about this and, before he died, tipped off fellow jazz musician and scholar Willie Ruff. Ruff drew a line from this to the Black Baptist tradition that's still alive in the South today, which itself led to the American gospel singing we're all familiar with. Of course, there are significant African-American influences in there too, but when you hear something like this recording from a Baptist church in Mississippi, with a soloist presenting the line before the congregation joins in, with each individual singing in their own way and time, it's hard to dispute the connection. And the psalm singing continued to travel on from here, further into American religious culture. Music historian Hugh Foley takes up the story.
As the missionaries want to proselytize to Native Americans, they change the language of the hymns to the Muscogee Creek language.
The Muscogee Creek Nation were originally from the region that's now the states of Tennessee, Georgia, and Alabama. They were forcibly removed in the 19th century and resettled in, among other places, Oklahoma, where Dr. Foley lives today.
I married a Muscogee Creek woman, and we started attending a church. So when we first heard a Scottish hymn as played to us by Professor Willie Ruff, our elders immediately said, well, that sounds like Ilge Ishti Dois, and Must This Body Die is the English translation, which is this melismatic style of singing where we apply many notes to one verse. Ilge Ishti Dois Cha Na.
The congregation of Hoochee Chuba Indian Baptist Church, part of the Muscogee Creek Nation, Oklahoma. Groups like this and the Black Baptists doing their line singing in the old way are increasingly rare now. It's a familiar story of aging, dwindling congregations, something that, back on Lewis, poses a huge threat to the survival of the psalm singing. And on Lewis, there's the added issue of language. While Gaelic is still spoken widely and taught in schools, English is increasingly the first language here, and so congregations are opting for the English rather than Gaelic services that churches hold.
When B.B. King does da-da-da-da, it sounds like B.B. King.
We're back in Callamartin's studio in the village of Toon. The walls are lined with guitars and banjos. He lives and breathes music and is leading the fight to halt the decline in psalm singing. Lewis's small, scattered Gaelic congregations need an urgent boost. So earlier this year, Callum and other senior members of the local churches decided to start running occasional Friday night services in the island's capital, Stornoway, as a way to bring people together like the big congregations of old.
We had about 200 people, all from different congregations, but all together with the one cause of the Gaelic language, a Gaelic service, but also the Gaelic singing. So what that does is it reinforces and it encourages us, and hopefully it'll make people redouble the effort to try and realise this is something really special. We should try and do our best to keep it going.
We're in the town hall in Stornoway. It's a big, open space that lets the singing ring round you, especially when you're surrounded by a congregation like this, of maybe 200 people. It's perhaps the closest we could get now to hearing what it must have been like in the old days. I was invited to take part. And from the first line, I realised that I had to give it everything. You just can't hold back with this kind of singing. I listened to the line, began improvising. But I was also listening to the people round about me, so if I got lost, I could pick up the thread from them. It certainly helped that I improvise a lot as a musician, but it's not an easy way to sing. So after the service, I was relieved to hear people around me give me a pat on the back for taking part. It was uplifting and powerful, and it felt such a privilege to be able to participate. We came out at the end to the sounds of a funfare blaring from the harbour just a few metres away. It was a stark contrast to the reverence inside the hall and an immediate reminder that for many islanders now, worship is no longer the focal point of their lives. What's more, the service we'd just been part of, big as it was, hadn't seemed to attract many newcomers. It was almost exclusively made up of middle-aged and older people, regular congregation members. Services like this on their own won't be enough. So Callum's taking a more evangelical approach too, holding Sam singing workshops and taking groups of singers to perform in concerts on the mainland in an attempt to bring new people into the worship. But this strategy is not without its problems either.
I bet there are people on either side,
yes,
who are saying, what are you doing concerts for?
Yeah.
That's the Lord's words. It's not intended to entertain people.
Ultimately, it will only survive if people are prepared to go out and be part of it. Let me be a bit cruel. Let me then go to a parable. When the king sent an invitation out to the people to come to his feast, he sent the invitation out to his own people first. Then they started making their excuses. I married a wife, I can't do this, that and the other. So then the Lord said, okay, I am now going to put that invite out to go out to the highways and byways and bring them in. God gave us the Gaelic Psalms, a real absolute treasure. So now we are essentially turning our back on that. However, out with our church or out with our own area, there are people showing a huge interest in it. Who's to say that God will not turn round and say, I am going to have a renaissance of this among, who knows, Indians, whoever. You don't have to be an actual fluent Gaelic speaker. So if, for example, in a congregation of 100 people, if 20 of them are Gaelic speakers, that's enough. The important thing is, like I mentioned earlier, it's learning the style of what it is. Now, how that style is going to mature or flower, who knows? But is that not an exciting thing for us to be looking forward to?
Yes, of course it is.
This imagined future of the psalm singing finding a home with new people, perhaps in different parts of the world, might seem optimistic. But the work of Callum and others on the island itself is bringing it to the attention of some younger people here. And that's what it desperately needs if it's going to survive.
Did you get tea?
No.
Would you like tea?
Yes, please.
Lauren and Alec John are 17. They're learning to be precentors, the ones that lead the congregation in the psalm singing. I meet them at an evening prayer meeting in Miavik on the Uig Peninsula. It must be at least 10 miles from any village to speak of, on a single-track road. If you've come here on a Wednesday night, you must really want to worship. After a chat with the group in the prayer room, we go into the main body of the church to talk about the psalm singing as they experience it.
When we were doing it in the primary, the teachers taught us to sing like note by note, if you know what I mean.
Aye.
No grace notes. It was
tuned
perfect. But when we got to our age, we are hearing more of the elderly singing it. It's the older generation that sounds more Gaelic, if you know what I mean.
Right. I mean, really, by that, you mean it has more decoration,
more flow,
grace
yeah.
notes. And the thing that I like is the way that people come in at different times with the old one.
That's a special thing. Like, what's really different to how young people do it is the older generation, you know, hold on to the line and then...
And that lovely overlapping is magic.
There's never, like, a pause when the older ones do it.
Precious in your still life.
We've now learned to kind of go with the elderly, and their way of doing it is a lot better than ours, and it's the way of doing it, really.
Yeah.
So I really hope that in about probably 50 years' time, we're the ones that are probably going to be doing it. So I really hope...
You'll be passing on to...
I really hope that it stays the way that they're doing it. If our generation doesn't start singing it, then it might start to die out. But I think as long as our language stays alive, our psalm singing will stay alive as well.
Sounds an awful lot on your shoulders, Lauren.
When you hear young voices like Lauren's singing like this, it does make you feel a little more optimistic that just maybe this amazing tradition might have a future. And the more time I spend on Lewis, the more I realise there are other ways in which traces of Gaelic psalm singing might live on. Lewis is an island steeped in music. It's not just the psalms that used to be sung day in, day out. Folk songs were part of the fabric too, whether at evening gatherings in the pub or at work. Like this walking song, traditionally sung by women as they walked their tweed, soaking and thumping it in time to add a finish to the newly woven fabric. So, as people spent their days moving between their homes, their workplace and the church, singing as they went, the religious and secular singing styles inevitably overlapped.
This Gaelic psalm singing was a constant every week of your life, and it was bound to have an effect on you.
Margaret Stewart is one of Lewis's finest folk singers. It's heartening to hear that, in a way, the Sam singing continues to live on in the music she makes.
And it's only as you get to much older that you realise that's why I sing the way I do, because that's the kind of singing I learnt or heard when I was growing up. The influence is evident when you hear the ornamentation in the Lewis singing particularly, which is very different to the way singers sing in the Southern Islands or Skye even. Very ornamental. When I was at Gaelic services in my youth, you could hear individuals ornamenting in their own way. It wasn't in unison, it was really free, and you could do what you wanted within that melody, and it was wonderful. I suppose you learn that from a very early age, and you got this freedom to move the melody just to suit you, and the way you sing it changes. Your ornaments might change, and it'll change depending on your mood or on the state of your voice and on the atmosphere or even the kind of room you're singing in. And you never know what kind of ornaments you're going to come out with. Sometimes you surprise yourself.
Margaret sings a lament for a boy from her village, Murdo Mackay, who died suddenly. He was known locally as Twinkle. The song remembers the psalms the boy used to sing and compares him to a mavis, an old word for a song thrush, singing melodiously. Laments like this seem to be where Sam and folk styles most naturally overlap. Another Lewis-born folk singer, Caitlin Smith, introduced us to a song about the fishermen from her village. We've come with her to the shoreline to hear it sung.
They were out on a boat called a scaw one day, and lots of men from the village around Ness, and suddenly a storm hit and they all were lost at sea, unfortunately. And it was actually my great-great-uncle, his son had actually gone out that day instead of him because he'd been feeling sick, and it was just by chance that this had happened, and it was awful for the family. So this song, it's called The Del Drowning, Bahe Gal.
You can hear the freedom and expressive intensity of the psalms in the way Caitlin Smith sings. The deserted, wind-swept beach we're on helps, of course.
teil shubion tu safar shinyo khariru au no shene mile haun sa khane geleri ari che get lion tage ku khaun achen chi hari aldig gach kroke shiliars clown khana ke neri achen ba gnyari eke nau nach gav shu truas ri chiloch gen mar keri chawn seglawn mŵr an chlawn gynnar i chyn is mar i chyn yn chawn na'n byg yn a harsa fel chy gyd fi card yn gawn ach sydd list yn is mynd na byn na chi chama lao.
Gaelic psalm singing has been close to my heart for more than 40 years, and it was exhilarating to experience it in the flesh for the first time and to talk to the people who have lived it all their lives. But sadly, it's hard not to come away thinking that in a few years from now, the once daily, now just weekly gatherings of islanders singing their Gaelic psalms could be a thing of the past. Perhaps this unique form of song will only live on in stories, in tales people tell about how they used to sing together and what it meant. Tales like this, told to us by Murdo MacLennan, a fisherman who's lived on the island for all of his 89 years. He still lives in a croft that overlooks the ocean where he spent many a day and night. And if it was a quiet night, once the nets were cast, he and his fellow fishermen might go below deck for a few minutes to praise God with a psalm.
I remember while being on the south bank of Scarpe, we used to shoot our nets very close to each other because the area was small where the herring was. There was Christians in most of the boats and there was worship and we could hear the singing coming up through the hatch there. It was heavenly, that's how I can describe. Give you a heavenly feeling, kind of out of this world, just for a moment until Satan comes in with something to spoil our worship. It's always got work for you to do. There's something wrong with that net, there's something wrong with the engine. Oh! When you consider there's only 2 inches between you, a plank holding you up, when you think of the depths below you, where God only can keep you safe. Oh, yes, you can see the work of the Lord at sea more than anything else. That's how I see it, anyway. I saw it a few times, of lives being saved by prayer. We prayed for safety and for guidance on a dark, stormy night. What will it be like in heaven? Nobody knows, but there's going to be singing there once we get there.
If I'm away from it for a long, long time and I hear it again, particularly if it's a sad occasion, like a funeral or something like that, it's powerful. It really just, tears me apart. It's very hard to cope with until I get used to the sound of it again.
Gaelic
You were immersed in it. Every week, all your life. You take it for granted, of course, at the time. It's only later in life, and when things start to disappear, that you notice that they're no longer there. And what you miss, and what was good, what was precious, or what's disappearing, you can't bring it back.
The Songhouse was presented by Ken Hyder. The producer was Chris Elkin. It was a White Stiletto production for the BBC World Service.